Insights, solutions, and networking all come together at RSA Conference. Join a global cybersecurity community at rsaconference.com/ITSPMAG24. Whether we are there or not, ITSP Magazine still gets the best stories. Plenty of conferences and events spark our curiosity and allow us to start conversations with some of the world's brightest minds. In person or virtually, Sean Martin and Marco Cappelli go on location and sit down with them at the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society. Together, we discover what the synergy of these three elements means for the future of humanity.
Marco,
Sean,
postcard in hand. I'm ready to roll.
Yeah. Where are you going?
Actually, that's a mistake because I'm off to go get a postcard so I can send it off somewhere else.
first you want to get to the place.
And I do want to get
you can
to
send
the
postcard because
it might take me a few days to get there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where are you going? Up there?
Space. Going up there. There you go. We're going way out. I'm going to ride a sat cube like a bronking bull at a pub, a country pub.
I want to see you do that.
I know.
Well, let's set the stage first.
All right.
Event coverage with Sean Martin, which is you, and Marco Cappelli, which is me. And we talk to people that go to talk to event. How about that?
Yep. We get the pleasure to attend many events, before, during, and after, in person and virtually, and talk to cool people doing cool things. And today, that cool person is Tim Fowler. Tim, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's very, very good to have you on. And that cool thing is hacking satellites and connected to event Hack SpaceCon, which congratulations, you were selected to participate in that event. I know it's not always easy getting accepted into those things.
Yeah, the CFP slog is brutal, you know. The one thing I have to always remind myself when the inevitable rejections do come in is like it's tough. Like, you know, I've organized conferences before where it's like, okay, we've got like 15 slots, 60 submissions. Like, yeah. Good luck. And so all the conferences that I've ever gotten rejected to, I don't take it personally. It's, you know, it's like, that stinks. But at the same time, then you see the lineup and you go, yeah, I get it. I get it. That was better than mine. So,
it's a good thing, right? I mean, doesn't it push you to do
raises the level
even more?
It does. It absolutely does. I'm going to try to get into ShmooCon this in 2025, as it's the last year I've tried and I've gotten very, very close, but it just hasn't worked out. But yeah, it's always one of those things that it's not an indictment of your research, your efforts, or anything like that. It's just, hey, we've got so many slots. We have we want to focus on this particular content. And, you know, we made a decision, and, you know, it's try harder, and stuff, but there's also a plethora of conferences out there that, you know, if you don't get into one, submit more.
And what this tells me, which I think is pretty cool, is that there are a lot of people looking at a lot of things that presumably a lot of them are really cool, like what you're doing, even if you don't make it for every single conference. There's a lot of work going on, and I mean, that gives me hope.
Yeah, there absolutely is. And there's so many little areas to specialize within the cybersecurity realm and stuff like that. And for the longest time, I've spent on offensive security. That's what I do for a day job for Black Hills Information Security, penetration tests, SIEM compromise, and stuff like that. But it's been in the last couple of years that I've really taken that focus and shifted it to a sector that isn't historically gotten a lot of attention from a security perspective, and that is the space domain. You know, here in the U.S., we've got the Space Force now, which is really, really cool. Well, depending on your perspective of it, and things like that. But it's like, how can I take what I know and breaking into organizations and breaking networks and making things work from my pleasure as a pentester and an attacker or simulated attacker, and apply that to the space domain, figuring out where the gaps are across the industry, where we kind of collectively have to move, as especially with the democratization of space, it's taking place where it's no longer just the governments and the militaries that are operating in the space apparatus. It's Amazon and Google and pick a, you know, every tech company that you know has some kind of presence and influence in space and stuff. We're on the what I call the space race 2.0, where it's the public race to space. And with that is going to come the need for us to better secure not only our assets in space today, but more so for the future. I liken it to the ICS realm, where, you know, 10, 20 years ago, ICS was absolutely a thing, but nobody was really talking about it from a security perspective. And as things became more accessible, and technology kind of changed and things like that, we started to see is like, hey, there's something going on here. We need to take a focus on that. And that's kind of where I'm at in my research and efforts from a space perspective.
Yep. I love it. And it's cool that you mentioned ICS, industrial control systems, because I was going to actually bring you there. So we've seen a transition from IT networks and securing those, and certainly more interest and focus on OT/ICS networks and systems and devices and space now getting more attention. What are some of the differences between those three? What excites you about the space one in particular?
So fundamentally, the thing that excites me about the space part is it's no different than the other two. Technologically, there are implementation differences. Slightly higher latency. In a lot of cases, there are operational constraints that don't exist in terrestrial networks or ICS implementations and things like that. So it is a unique environment to be able to operate, but fundamentals don't change. The way we architect things properly don't change. It's just more about we're now starting to dial in the microscope on these space segments and vehicles and things like that to go, hey, we really need to start doing the stuff we've been doing over here. We need to start doing this now. And that's the exciting thing for me is that and the thing that I actually enjoy most when I'm talking about space and training people and things, it's like I've got a slide in my training class that it's a multi-tier web application like network diagram, and it's a satellite and with all the subsystems, and they're the exact same diagram. It's just thinking about it in what we know, take what we know and apply it to something that we don't know. And what we start to figure out is the terminology might be different, the actual technologies might be different, but from an architecture, from an approach, it's the exact same. And that's really the thing that makes me excited is like, hey, it's not this some foreign abstract concept that you have to learn. Yeah, there are a lot of kind of abstract things that you're going to have to learn from the space side of things. But if we can put it into concepts that we already understand, it makes it much more approachable, and then you can learn the details as you go, as long as you understand those fundamentals.
Very cool. So I'm not going to wear my society hat right now, because I had plenty of conversation about, you know, how it's space influence in everyday life and GPS and many, many, many more. I want to go into how do you one day get up, put your pants on and hack a sat? Right. So you said things like, I'm going to get into specific following on what you were saying, meaning the way to look at things is about the same. The methodology is about the same, but the tools are different. And I'm thinking like, you with an AM radio, you can talk to the International Space Station. There was a video the other day with a guy with an antenna, like an old TV antenna, that I don't know if it's true or not, but apparently it connected to this.
100% true. 100% true. All right.
So good. Yeah. I love that kind of stuff. So what do you need to actually execute what you're doing?
Yeah. So you're going to need, in most cases, as I said, you're going to need a lot of the same skills that you already have if you're going to approach. So if I tell you I'm going to hire you as a penetration tester to breach my organization, and we have this super secret software that's the target for you, okay? Well, there's fundamentally nothing different than, hey, I want you to breach me, and we happen to be running a satellite that has our secret sauce software in it. You're going to have to use your same kind of skill sets from an OSINT perspective to just, you know, be able to learn as much as you can, doing all the reconnaissance efforts and things like that. at some point in time, it's going to take some mechanism of a breach, whether it's through social engineering or missing patches or anything like that. Credential misuse is a common one. We saw that in the K8 sat hack on the eve of the Ukrainian invasion, where credentials were compromised and were used in an unauthorized way. From that perspective, I'm literally going to treat it just like I would like a normal penetration test and stuff. Where the complexities start to change is when we actually get into the communication, the system of actually interacting with the satellite, understanding what the protocols are, understanding what the packet structure looks like, the command structure, the telemetry structure. That's where it does start to get a little bit different. And you do have to understand kind of at a specialized level, that there are intricacies and things like that. The ability to reverse engineer firmware, looking for those vulnerabilities and stuff like that, for potential buffer overflows and command injections and stuff. These are all things we do in CTFs and stuff like that. Not so much in the real world, unfortunately. But it's still going to be the same kind of tactile approach. As far as, you know, you're talking about like signals and stuff, like SDRs have been absolutely pivotal how they've impacted our ability to interact with space systems. I did a webcast last week, I think, on software-defined radios for space signal analysis, and talked about in 2019, the SpaceX Falcon 9 was sending unencrypted telemetry and video feeds to the ground from the rocket. And some very intrepid hackers were able to demodulate that and decode that and stream the SpaceX Falcon 9 live video from, I think it was the stage 2 liquid oxygen tank camera. And then within three weeks, all communication or all telemetry was encrypted, which was cool. But that, like, that was a capability of software-defined radio with just signal processing. And a lot of that aspect can happen offline. Once you capture those initial signals, it's just a matter of brute force and determination to eventually we're going to be able to reverse engineer those, decode those, and demodulate those appropriately to be able to see what's there. And once if you're dealing with the unencrypted communications, now the whole gambit is there. And there are reasons that communications are unencrypted, especially in space systems. There are reasons that they have to be encrypted. And how you manage that from an operational standpoint, from a mission perspective, is one of those constraints that I talked about. Like, that's kind of unique to space, because we have this whole thing called ionizing radiation that can cause absolute havoc to your memory on board. And so we use specialized hardware to try to reduce the impact of ionizing radiation. But what happens if you have your encryption keys sitting in a flash memory and experiences a bit flip? Well, your communication's gone, which means you now have to figure out how you're going to restore communication. You're going to have to fall back to unencrypted communication at some point in time, which means you now have a whole decision tree that you have to make of what are we going to limit? Hey, we're on open comms. The only thing we can do is reestablish encrypted comms. We don't want to have full control of our satellite just sitting there going, it's like, oh, do a barrel roll, enter, and all of a sudden, you know, it starts barreling off in orbit.
Remember, I'm riding this thing now, so put in the barrel roll.
Yeah. Well, hold on. It's going to get real interesting. No. But yeah, and so fundamentally, here again, it's the same type of stuff that we look at from web applications, from desktop application, reverse engineering and binary stuff like that. It's network protocols and stuff like that. It's just they're done in a very specific, very strategic way that we're not necessarily used to kind of approaching from a general cybersecurity perspective. We're not used to like actually looking at packet definitions and defining each single bit in a packet and what it means.
So this might seem like a lame question, and that's because I'm lame and I don't know everything. Thankfully, I like to continue to learn. but see, you mentioned software-defined radios. I think look over to software-defined networks, and a lot of stuff you just described was around software and the communications between software and systems, but I'm just wondering the role of software here. Has it increased over
software
time?
Yes. So software has always been a thing. Well, not always. So Sputnik 1, it really wasn't software. It was just all integrated circuits, not even integrated circuits, just circuits doing it purely electrically through signal processing stuff. But the modern day, the modern satellite is a flying hunk of chips and processors and stuff that is to support the software. Software is the key. It is the biggest weakness if we look at historical events, even into recent moon landings and things like that for different countries. And you see, it fundamentally has come down to the failure, success and failure is dependent on software. Because the software side of things is really, really, really difficult inherently. Don't throw out cybersecurity. Just getting the software to function and predict and to account for every possible variable and thing, that in of itself is a challenge. And in doing so, that's typically where you may introduce vulnerabilities and things like that from a cybersecurity perspective, because we're having to account for every possible state and iteration and processes, and we're designing PID controllers to be able to manage our movements and predict, and like it's very complex systems from a software perspective that takes a lot of thought, a lot of execution. It has to be well designed, and it has to be fault tolerant. You talked about software defined networking, like the new thing. I want to say new SDR in satellite applications has been around since the 90s, but really it's this concept of software defined satellite, where you have a satellite bus, a generic satellite bus that has all the bells and whistles that you necessarily need. You can go buy this off the shelf from a vendor or something like that, and then you define your entire mission, you define your entire capability purely in software. So software has always been kind of present and been the fundamental issue. As far as like when things go wrong, there are cases where it is hardware that fails, but more the times than not, it's going to be a software issue. And oftentimes software issues can lead to hardware failures when things get out of bounds and stuff like that. So at the heart of it, secure software development lifecycle is fundamental. Contingency planning in your software is fundamental. That's where the heart of everything is going to be, is in software.
I have a question, and I know we're going to go longer than 20 minutes already.
But I'm okay. Sorry.
It's totally cool. This is cool. I mean, I'm fascinated by all of this. I love space and everything that come with it. So my question is, following a conversation we just had with the Isaac, right, Sean, Space Isaac, and we were talking about the complexity that now it's way more than what it used to be when it was all military, like it was national control. I mean, the the race to space wasn't with commercial entity. Now you mentioned that we got commercial entity. We're looking at going just for a trip to space, hotel in space. So put the futuristic hat on. And what do you see it coming? I mean, first of all, I see a lot of people need it that do the job that you do. That's for sure. And how is these commercial versus, you know, national effort and government coming all together and standards? Is it be a big mess? That's my guess.
Yes. And there's the potential for chaos is always there. The one thing that I will say, in the research that I've done, and this is backed up by some other people's research and things like that, that typically the bigger and the more complex the project or the mission in space, the more likely that mission is to adhere to established standards, which is good. Now, there are some caveats to that, depending on nations that you're talking about and things like that. But there are some very, very robust and comprehensive recommendations and standards, most of them put out by an organization called CCSDS, the Consultative Committee for Space Systems Data Systems. I just call it CCSDS. If you want some very difficult reading, go read these blue books and green books and things like that. There are frameworks, even from NIST, and recommendations and stuff on how to secure infrastructure, both in spacecraft, both on the ground station, communication links. There are a lot of these kind of pushed for these standards, because one of the things that standards help us do is it helps us have interoperability and things. Because if I'm, let's say I'm working for space company, not SpaceX, but Space B, and then I go work for, you know, Green Origin over here, I don't necessarily want to have to learn all new stuff because it's like, oh, we're doing this super proprietary, things like that. No, standardizations will absolutely help. And we're going to see, I think, more and more of this kind of framework structures that people are getting on board with and being like, okay, here's how we're going to do this, because it keeps things consistent and it keeps things stable in terms of, you know, not having a bunch of competing frameworks and things like that. And so I think we're gonna head there. Effectively, I call it GRC in space, governance, risk, and compliance. And there's going to be a big push for that, because we're already seeing it. Like, and a great example is the space debris. It's an issue. We hear a lot about it. Everybody's afraid of the Kepler syndrome, Chrysler syndrome. Where, you know, chain reaction satellites hitting satellites and debris and stuff like that. But like, so like one of the things we have to do now, if we want to launch like a CubeSat into space, we have to have like a 10-year deorbit plan. And we have to be able to show that like we can meet that, so that, you know, within a 10-year period that satellite will no longer be a threat to anybody else and stuff. And just taking some of those kind of regulatory compliance steps to making sure that we're being good stewards within space, because nobody owns space.
Did you say deorbit plan?
Yeah, a deorbit plan. So
taking it out of orbit, does that mean actually retrieving it, or
the goal is to deorbit it into the atmosphere so that it burns up. But you want to make sure that you do that in a safe manner. With CubeSats and things like these nano and pico satellites, it's much less of a risk or a burden, a thing like that. It's more one of you're thinking, if you're wanting to deorbit, you know, a 2,000 ton GPS satellite, that's a lot of mass. And you want to do it in a way that when you still have control over the satellite, because if you, it's like, yeah, well, we ran out of batteries, we ran out of propulsion. Okay, let's just hope it, you know, gravity will win eventually. But what is the carnage that it could cause on the way down, especially when you're not able to maintain your orbits and stuff like that? So it's just being able to to deorbit safely. There's entire companies that are dealing with de-escalation of potential events because of collisions. You know, they're tracking all of these satellites and, you know, hey, you're on course to, you know, it may be 200 orbits from now or something like that, but you could potentially collide with another satellite, and being able to de-escalate, figure out who's going to move and stuff like that. There's a whole entire industry of just cooperation in space.
Waste management.
You just set your little dumpster bag out and they'll come. There are actually missions help clean up space debris and manage, especially the larger chunks. There was a mission that was scheduled, I think, January this year, where the original target was about 150 kilogram mass, but it got hit by a piece of space debris last year, and now it's 150 kilograms of much smaller chunks of debris, and they're like, yeah, we can't go and recover that. Wow. But yeah, there's cleanups efforts, and I mean, there's a whole, like, that people don't realize just how incredibly diverse the space industry really is.
So I want to get to your session at Hack Space Con, and this is, I mean, it's a super cool thing. It's going to touch a lot of people beyond Hack Space Con, I hope. So you talked about frameworks. Thanks for bringing that up, Marco. You talked about software, which leads me to, well, the frameworks say that there's some openness to what's happening. And with software, it makes it much more accessible as well, in terms of it's easier to get software than sometimes getting some hardware, and some of the hardware you could potentially virtualize with software. So it's becoming more accessible to folks to actually see what's going on and get in and explore and have some fun. And that's what your talk at Hack Space On is all about, right?
That's exactly
getting a system up and running and having some fun.
Yeah, so give us a peek
of what's going on there.
Yeah, so I'm really excited. So HackSpaceCon, we're going to be debuting this workshop called BIOS, Bring Your Own Satellite. And it's effectively a kind of step-by-step process for building out a virtual satellite lab at home. And the nice thing about it is it's primarily focused on the virtual side of stuff, as you kind of talked about, like the being able to simulate and emulate things through software. It gives us the ability to go hands-on without spending tremendous amount of money and just being able to play. But the workshop just kind of walks attendees through a brief introduction to, like, some of the concepts and stuff, like, hey, you kind of need to know what this means to be able to actually do it. And then we walk through and go through, we deploy an open source mission control solution that it allows us to manage our spacecraft, both and send commands and telemetry to and from the spacecraft. We'll be deploying not one, at least two, possibly three virtual satellites of various complexities and things like that. One will be based off of NASA's Core Flight System, which is a flight-proven flight software that's open source. So you can kind of go play around with, like, some real stuff that has heritage of flying space. But I also have some custom virtual satellites that I've built for the purpose of this workshop to kind of take that the barrier of entry and drop it down conceptually. It's like, it's not the most technically accurate representation of a satellite and stuff, but it's foundationally accurate. And so where it's like everything from a command structure may be packed into bits and bytes, we're doing string-based commands and stuff like that, so you can visually see it and understand it and stuff. But then the last part of that is, like, kind of laying out a little framework of, like, how you can go and do your own, expand it and build it. But also the other aspect to that is that you can then also integrate physical hardware into the virtual environment. And I'll talk a little bit about that at the end, because there are some open source like CubeSats simulators that you can go and build and buy kits and stuff like that, of how you can then take and going off the virtual actually do it on the real hardware. And that's where we're going to get. It's we got a lot to go through. It's a very short workshop time frame at Hexbase, and that's I'm just eternally grateful that I get to do it. They had a lot of workshops to try to pack into a single day, so we only got about an hour and 15 to go through it. But it actually works out well, because that means there'll be a lot of additional steps that attendees can take after the fact to be able to continue to learn.
Wow. Last question. Is the Death Star still unhackable?
Which version of the Death Star? I mean, let's be honest. If we're still going to continue to leave gaping 2-meter holes in the side of our, you know, star base, yeah, probably. It's going to continue.
But the hardware is an X-wing there, so you need one of those.
But maybe some government requisition or something, you know, check gov deals or something like that. See if we can find a used X-Wing for a reasonable price. Check your local swamps.
Jokes apart, this was fascinating. Yeah. Thank you so much for stopping by, and hope we can get more of this conversation with you.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a blast, and I'd love to talk about the societal aspects of space, because that's the part that people, we don't quite understand how reliant we are on space as an ecosystem just to function in our daily lives. We're going to become even more reliant on that in the future, in the very near future too. So I'd love to come back sometime.
Let's have that conversation for sure.
I'll be happy to hear that one. And in the meantime, I'm not ready to build my own Death Star, but you have to start somewhere.
Yeah, start with a simulated CubeSat.
That's my
recommendation for everybody. Following the actual workshop, there is going to be a fairly sizable open source release of most of the content for people that can't go to the workshop. There will also be other offerings of the workshop for in person. Throughout the year. One will be in the summer. It'll be a live stream in conjunction with Black Hills Information Security and Anti-Siphon Training. There'll be a live in-person workshop at Wild West Hacking Fest in South Dakota in October. And officially, unofficially, it will be at the Aerospace Village at DEF CON.
Oh, cool.
And then we will be there with Henry and Steve and crew. So.
Yeah, they kind of got excited about all this, and they're like, come. And I'm like, okay, we'll come.
I can see Henry and Steve get excited about that for sure.
Love it. All right. So the session, first off, is at Hackspace Con, April 10th through the 13th, Kennedy Space Center in Florida. Tim's session is A New Ethos, A Journey into the Why, How, and Who Cares of Building a Simulated CubeSat Lab. It's on April 12th at noon local time there in Florida. In which room? The Millennium Falcon room. There you go.
That's my presentation. And then the actual workshop is the next day. Doing a talk and a workshop, and the workshop bios, Bring Your Own Satellite. That will be on the 13th at I think 1 p.m., I believe. And I don't remember which room it is, but it's all up on the calendar. I'm super excited about Hackspace Con. It is going to be an incredible event. If you can come out, be a part of the community, you're not going to regret it.
I can see that. And grateful to have you on, Tim. Thanks for doing all that you do. And
thanks so much
for paying it forward with that session and the workshop. And of course, everybody listening and watching, Take some time there if you can. If you're interested, go learn and participate with the community, and follow Marco and I as we continue our journey covering different events and conferences, many of which Tim mentioned will be at as well, either in person or virtually. So we hope to see you all there. Thanks, Tim. Thanks, Marco. Thanks, everybody, for watching.
See you, everybody.
Thanks, gentlemen.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Sean and Marco's On Location event coverage conversations.
please take a moment to give the show a good rating and leave a comment. Remember to share this podcast with your friends, family, and colleagues. Come back for more conversations and follow Sean Martin and Marco Cappelli as they continue their journey toward redefining cybersecurity and society. Insights, solutions, and networking all come together at RSA Conference. Join a global cybersecurity community at rsaconference.com/ITSP Mag 24.